Alright, so we were in the middle of the Havdalah in Shmoneh Esrei of Motzi Shabbos, and the last thing that we had discussed evening.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Set ourselves down.
Sure.
No assigned seats. So we're in the middle of Havdalah of Motzi Shabbos. That's in the Shmoneh Esrei of Maariv Motzi Shabbos. So we talked about last week about the past couple of weeks. We talked about the four different Havdalahs that there's that we mentioned the Havdalah bein Kodesh Chol, bein Or LeChoshech, bein Yisraelim, and bein Yom HaShvi'i LeSheish Yemei Maaseh. And we talked about the significance of each of those and how those kind of form what makes Havdalah. So the next words, moving on, the next line, Avinu Malkenu, our father, our king, Hachel Aleinu Hayamim Habayim Likrasinu. That word Hachel we'll try and translate soon, but let's just say, let's go with Art Scroll's translation of just begin for us, from the word Haschala. The days coming upon us, that L'shalom, for peace, Chasuchim Mikol Chet. They should be removed. They should be prevented from all chait, from all sin. Uminukim mikol avon. They should be cleaned from all sin, iniquity. Umidubakim biyarsecha, and connected to yira of Hashem. So we're trying to understand the different components of this line. So start with Avinu Malkenu. Avinu Malkenu. So as we mentioned, the first Havdalah was the putting away of the light at the end of the Sheish Yemei Bereishis, at the end of Bereishis, so after Adam Arishon sinned, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu put away the light from the Or HaGanos, the light of creation, but he kept it. It kept around. It stayed around for Shabbos, and at the end of Shabbos, that light was put away, and that was the first Havdalah, was the separating between light and darkness that happened at the end of the first Shabbos. So this Avinu Malkenu, the Rabbeinu Yehuda ben Yakar says, is really a reference to that. And he says that we say Avinu because Hashem had rachamim, like a father, on Adam Arishon, that he let him live, that he didn't get rid of him right away because he'd messed up. But Malkenu, because eventually he was held accountable for what he did. Eventually he did die because of the sentence that he got for what he did wrong. And therefore it was, it's Avinu Malkenu is also still related to that first sentence, that first stage that Adam HaRishon had of that first Motzi Shabbos when the Or was put away. So that same idea. So the Eitz Yosef, another one of the commentaries that we quote a lot, says that Avinu corresponds to the idea of Da'as, the idea of wisdom, like a father who teaches his son, that we said at the beginning, Atachonu Lamada Torasecha, and Malkenu corresponds to the Torah and the Chukim, which was the next part, which was Vatilamdenu Lasos Chukei Ritzonecha, that Hashem teaches us to perform the mitzvos that we don't necessarily understand. They're gzeris melech alavadav. They're just the decree that a king gives to his servants, and the servants do it because the king said so. So just to relate to that, the Lavush and also the Tosos Yom Tov, they both say the same idea that atachonin, that's when we say at the beginning of this bracha, before the Havdalah part, atachonin ladam das, that atachonin is chachma ba'alma, it's regular wisdom, it's any wisdom, it's even secular wisdom, and atachonantanu of the beginning of Havdalah is the chanina, is what Hashem gives us, the wisdom of the Torah. That's atachonantanu lamada torasecha, that you give us to understand your Torah. So the same thing, that it's atachonin la'adam da'as, and atachonantanu lamada torasecha, is these two levels again of the, and that's the Eitz Yosef says is the same idea of Avinu Malkenu, is speaking to these two levels of the wisdom that just, so to speak, a normal wisdom the wisdom that we understand, that we're taught, and the wisdom which is sort of like a Gzeiras Melech. It's even though we don't necessarily understand it, it's a wisdom which might be under something which might be beyond our understanding, but that also that we that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives that to us. Okay, so I wanted to the next words, Hachel Aleinu. So this word Hachel,
little Rabbi Shaps.
This word Hachel is an interesting word. It's exactly what the Shoresh of that word is. So I mentioned that Art Scroll translated this as begin for us, something like that, begin for us. But the Rabbeinu Yehuda ben Yakar says three different possible meanings of what this word hachel, what the shoresh of the word is, and what it means, and trying to and focus a little bit on each one. So this is three possibilities. It says that they have hachel like from haschala, like the way Art Scroll translated it, start. We have hachel meaning a chalos means for something to take effect. That something takes place. It's called that it's chal, like we talk about Yom Tov Shechal Liyos B'Shabbos. When Yom Tov falls out on Shabbos, is when Yom Tov, you know, takes effect on Shabbos. That's also that's the same shor as chal. And the last one he says is Tocheles. Tocheles means hope. It's to look towards something is to be Tochala is a hope towards something. So he says the next one is that to give us hope. So just trying to understand each of these three things. So when we say that in Motzi Shabbos, we say that Hashem should hachel aleinu hayamim abayim likrasinu, that He should begin upon us these days coming upon us should be for shalom. They should be clean, and they should be clear. So we're asking for Hashem to make the week start off on the right foot. We have an idea in Judaism that hakol holchem achar harosh, that everything follows after the start of something, the way something begins is sort of a deterministic of the way that it's going to continue. We have a mitzvah of bikurim. It's very interesting. The mitzvah of bikurim is by no means to take the best fruits. The mitzvah of bikurim is to take the first fruits. It's not choosing, you know, the nicest one, but it's choosing the first thing, because when you take the start of something, and we take the very first fruits and we dedicate that to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that kind of sets a tone of where everything else is going to follow. And the foundation always needs to be set in correctly, or the whole structure will be skewed. You know, a minuscule mistake in the start is amplified as you continue out onwards or upwards, that the more that something develops, if there's a mistake in the beginning of something, the more it develops, the more that mistake is going to be amplified. The mashal, you're building a skyscraper. So, you know, if in the bottom row, if in the laying the foundation, something was a little bit at the top. So by the time you get to the end, you're going to get a Leaning Tower of Pisa. But if the foundation of it is straight and the way it's supposed to be, then as it continues up, it'll stay on that path. And similarly, you know, you throw something. You start off on a path. So the further you get out from your starting point, a small, you know, a 1 degree difference in your trajectory is going to be, you know, hundreds of miles by the time you've gone far enough, is going to be, you know, very far from the direction you were trying to head. So there's that you have to have the correct fundamentals, or you won't be headed in the right direction. So you have to have in the hashkafos also, in that and in the life outlook that we have also. So a person needs to be set in straight, or you'll be going in the wrong direction. The same thing, that every week has to start off on that going in the right direction, that we ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu it should start in the right way, because if it starts in the right way, if it's off on the right foot, so then the rest of the week could be set in that tone, in that direction. So that's haschala. Second understanding that the Rabbi Yehuda ben Yakar said was the idea of chalos, of making something take effect, to happen. So the Ora Chaim makes a very interesting point in the pasuk that we say during davening. We say it in one of the kiddushes. If you say all of the pesukim kiddush. They say ki sheshes yamim asa Hashem es hashamayim v'es haaretz uvayom hashvi shavas v'yinafash. So we say that, which we would probably, if we were translating it without thinking about it too much, say because in 6 days Hashem created the heaven and the earth. But that's not actually what the pasuk says. The Orachaim points out it does not say ki b'sheshes yamim asa Hashem es hashamayim v'es haaretz. It says ki sheshes yamim asa Hashem es hashamayim ve'es ha'aretz. It doesn't say that in 6 days Hashem created the shamayim and ha'aretz. It says that 6 days Hashem created shamayim and ha'aretz. So what exactly does that mean? So says the Aruch Chaim that Hashem created the world. The way he created it was that every Shabbos he creates the world for a 6 day unit at a time. Every Shabbos, HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings out the creation of the following week. Every HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates the world from Shabbos to Shabbos, and every Shabbos has in it that koach, the energy of creation of the week to follow. It's Sheshes Yomim Asa Hashem Esher Shemayim Ve'aretz. Hashem made the earth for 6 days, and then Yom Hashvi'i Shavas Vayinafash, and then you have a Shabbos, and the Shabbos is what refreshes and reinvigorates the world with that koach, with the energy to go on for another week. And I saw that Rabbi Leff explains that that's why in so many Jewish life events that we commemorate or we preempt what's going to happen in the following week on the Shabbos before. The Shabbos before Rosh Chodesh is Shabbos Mevarchim. The Shabbos before a bris is a Shalom Zachar. The Shabbos before a marriage is an Ofraf. There's always the Shabbos before. There's sort of a celebration of the event that's going to happen in that week, because Shabbos is the point at which the koach, the energy of that event, of everything that's going to be in the week to come, comes into the world from that. And each Shabbos is, in a certain sense, is the shoresh, is the root of the existence of the following week. And this is why we call Shabbos Sha'ar HaBracha. Shabbos is called the gate of blessing, because all blessing comes to the week through Shabbos, because it is the source of that coming week's existence. Everything that is going to be in the next week came into the world through the gate of Shabbos, the energy that made that into what it is, that allowed that to unfold. That all comes on. That's all brought into the world on Shabbos.
Quick question.
Yeah.
So why is it Sheshes Yamim Asa instead of Osa? Why is it like past, like?
Right. So okay. So the pasuk in context is really talking about the original 6 days of creation. Right, so the Aruch Chaim is that mm-hmm. the original, the way the world was structured, that when the very beginning Hashem created the world for 6 days, and then came Shabbos, and through Shabbos, that's how the world is able to continue for the next 6 days. But right, in context, the literal meaning of the verse is that is talking about the original 6 days of creation. So it is talking about a past tense event, but the Aruch Chaim is saying that that first 6 days was only created for 6 days. It wasn't that over the duration of 6 days, Hashem created the world. It's that 6 days was the creation of the world, and after that, came Shabbos, and that was the end of creation. It was only because Shavas Vayinafash that there was a refreshing of creation that happens on Shabbos that it continued.
It's also the day that determines the beginning too, not just the end.
What do you mean?
Like, it determines the end of the week, and then it also determines the following week.
Right, and then also it determines the middle of the week, right? Because we also have that when do you start taking into account the upcoming Shabbos? If you're going to leave on a
Wednesday.
If you're going to leave on a trip to go out to sea, and you don't you're going to go be for a long trip that you're not going to be coming back for Shabbos, you're not allowed to leave within 3 days of Shabbos after Wednesday. The Shir Shel Yom of Wednesday morning is the one that ends with Lechu Naranana, the beginning of Kabbalah Shabbos. And Tuesday afternoon is the last point when you can make Havdalah, right? So Shabbos is actually also the middle of the week. Shabbos is the beginning, the middle, and the end of the week in different respects.
Also, Avinu Malkeinu, which Avinu Malkeinu, when was Avinu Malkeinu first, that Lashon? Is it in the Amida or the Avinu Malkeinu, like said on... Yeah.
So the words of Avinu Malkeinu are in this bracha, right?
Right.
So it was.
Just saying a matter of
historically, which came first.
Yeah.
I am going to have to assume that Shmoneh Esrei came first, because Shmoneh Esrei was authored by the Anshei Knesset Gedola, and the rest of davening, except for that which came from Tehillim, which was obviously earlier, but the rest of it was mostly authored later. Piyutim, some of which were authored by Tanaim from the Mishnah, but the not as early as the Anshei Kinas HaGedola.
I want to ask like kind of more of a theoretical question, but it's interesting how Shabbos...
Open your daughter who got married.
Like Shabbos would be
more
the week.
Like
Shabbos would be like the source of blessing for the following week, but I was going to ask, how do you explain that, like, you know, Rosh Hashanah is also a source of blessing of the day that determines the entire year, so it's almost like the Shabbos of the year, so to speak, but on Shabbos, you're not really supposed to daven for the things that you need during the week. You're only supposed to meet in Shabbos, but it's not necessarily like that with Rosh Hashanah. You're supposed to daven for all the things that you need.
So actually, it's very interesting you mentioned that. The truth is, the halacha is that that on Rosh Hashanah also, you're not supposed to daven for your personal needs.
Right.
There is a big discussion about why today we do. I personally don't, but the Rav Yisrael Salanter has a whole discussion about it. If you're interested, you can ask my wife. She knows more about it than me. But in terms of just how does that work? If Shabbos is the Shahr HaBracha, but on Shabbos that we don't, you know, we specifically don't ask for anything, I think actually is exactly this point that Shabbos is sort of the shoresh. It's the root of everything to come, and the week before kind of leads up to Shabbos, and then the bracha that comes out on Shabbos is then what leads into the next week. Shabbos is it's called Shabbos Malchusas, the bechina of Malchus. The Gemara says that Melech leisle megar meklom, that a king has nothing of his own because the king is entirely an expression of bringing out the potential of the nation. The king doesn't have his own kind of koach. I don't remember if we spoke about this, but we definitely will speak about it at some point. That the whole idea of Shabbos is kind of taking the energy from the week before and bringing out bracha, which is going to then lead into the next week, which kind of speaks to what you're pointing out, that Shabbos is both the end of the previous week and the beginning of the next week. I did speak for a while on the shiur that we had right before Rosh Hashanah about this idea of Rosh Hashanah being the potential and how kind of the shoresh of everything that's going to come out for the rest of the year. And I did finally get myself together and upload all of the shiurim since like the middle of Elul and put them on the, at least sent them to the website to be put up. So eventually those will be available. fine. So the last one that hachel would be from the shorish of tocheles, which comes from the word, word means hope. So exactly what does it mean that Hachel Aleinu, that you should give us hope for the next 6 days? What is having hope have to do with anything? What's the significance of that? So I heard this pshat from a friend that he heard it from Ritzvi Meyer Zilberberg in Yerushalayim at one of his he is a Rebbe in Yerushalayim who you could, if you want to hear him speak, you could record his Shalosh Shittos because it goes on for hours after Shabbos. So after you've gone home and made Havdalah, you could head on over there and be there for another 2 hours of Shalosh Shittos. But so he was discussing that it says towards the end of Parshas Va'era, towards the middle of Parshas Va'era, it says that after Moshe came back to, is that end of Parshas Shmos? Beginning of Parshas Va'era? I'm not sure. That it says that after Moshe came back to Mitzrayim and he came to speak to Paro, so when he came to the Jewish people, so they were all excited, he came to Paro, Paro said, you know, nothing doing, and then he made them work even harder, and then Hashem tells Moshe, go tell the nation again that I'm going to take them out of Mitzrayim, and Moshe goes to Klal Yisrael, And he tells them, and it says that the lo yishma am mikotze ruach umeavoda kasha, that the nation didn't hear him because of kotze ruach vavoda kasha, that the hard work and they were, you know, short of ruach, of spirit, of energy, whatever it was. So then Hashem tells Moshe, go to Paro and tell him to send out Bnei Yisrael. And Hashem, and Moshe says back to Hashem, he says that Bnei Yisrael didn't listen to me, v'heach yishma'eni Paro, and how is Paro going to listen to me? And seemingly, what Moshe Rabbeinu is saying, and I think Rashi explains it in this sort of way, but that that seemingly what Moshe is saying is that, you know, kind of a kal v'chomer, that, you know, if Bnei Yisrael didn't listen to me, so then certainly Paro's not going to listen to me. And it's a very funny kind of extrapolation that Moshe is making, because the Torah just told us that the reason the Jewish people didn't listen was mikotzer ruach mi'avod akasha. And Paro doesn't have those same problems. Bnei Yisrael were they had these mitigating circumstances. They had the backbreaking labor that they were being that was being forced upon them. And Paro had no such impediments to listening. So exactly what is Moshe trying to say, that, you know, Bnei Yisrael didn't listen to me, how's Paro going to listen to me? So Rav Tzvi Meir explained that Moshe was not extrapolating, wasn't making a kal v'chomer. Moshe was explaining why he saw it as hopeless that Paro would listen. Because if Bnei Yisrael didn't listen, and Bnei Yisrael were not hoping for the Geula, then the Geula wouldn't happen. That it's only because there is a she'ifa, it's only because there is a yearning for it, there is hoping for it, that is going to bring it about. It's only because they are that they're looking towards it and they have that in mind that's what's going to bring it to happen. It's hope is a prerequisite for things to happen. And if Klal Yisrael was in such yeush, in such despair, that they were no longer able to hope for the Galus, so Moshe Rabbeinu was saying that if Klal Yisrael is no longer looking towards the Geula, so then how is Paro possibly going to let them go? There's nothing to bring out the Geula if there isn't that she'ifa, if there isn't that hope that the Geula is going to come. The value of having this she'ifa, having a drive towards something, having the desire and the hope that something is going to be, is a necessary component of that bracha coming out. And therefore, there's this same bakasha on Motzi Shabbos as we start the week. Hachel aleinu hayamim vayim likrasinu l'shalom, that you should give us the hope, you should give us the capacity, or the environment, give us that there is that what to the energy to hope towards it, that we should be able to have that energy, to have that drive, and that is going to be what brings it about, what causes it to come about. Okay, I think we'll have time, hopefully, to get through the last point.
I'm going to hold you back from the last point, though. But what actually happened in Mitzrayim then was that Hashem responded when Ben Israel cried out. So it wasn't like the absence, it might have been the absence of hope, but it was sort of total despair. And that's when he actually started the process, when they finally called out to him. If you look at, I believe that's what it is, if you look at the parasha.
Right, it says, V'yizakim v'yizaku el Hashem, v'asham Hashem v'zaka
asal. So hope was not really an element there. It was something that came in response to their finally calling out to them.
But you're only going to call out if you have a certain sense of, it has to be a little bit of hope or something else. Like, why would you
even? Or despair. Like, I can't take this anymore. It has to, like, I mean, maybe I'd like it to end, but that's different than I can't, I'm done. It's almost like it could even be like the absence of hope. Like, there's nothing left to even do or try or anything, just the calling out. So it's an interesting, I don't know.
But in the Medrash space, wasn't that pasuk the Medrash that the woman, she's calling out to Hashem because of what happened to her child or something? What was that?
I don't know.
Yeah, that there's a woman who gave birth in the mud pit of making the bricks, and the baby kind of got like absorbed into the whatever it was, and became a brick.
That doesn't matter.
And then she called out, and it was like that. Like, I can't. Like, it was, but it was a calling out. Like, some, no, I don't know. Maybe it was despair. I don't know.
There is a difference, and I off the top of my head, I don't remember how it goes, but there is a difference between the za'aka and tsa'aka, which is exactly along these lines. I don't remember which is which, and I don't remember, I'm sure Tzvi could help us, is it za'aka sam or tsa'aka sam in the pasuk? Vata'al, do you remember?
Shabbos.
Okay, so is it Vayizak, not Vayan. Okay, it is with the Zion. So I don't remember which is which. If one of them is this is this idea of despair, mm-hmm. and the other one is this idea of
hoping.
Right, and I don't remember which is which, but, so I can look that up.
Another
hopefully.
Good word with chal is halal, which is like very relevant because halal means space. I just
right.
wanted to mention that.
Right, halal means specifically not just a space, but a vacuum, a vacancy,
yeah.
something
yeah.
which
yeah.
used
yeah.
to be filled, which is now empty. We'll talk about that actually when we get to something or other. By Mechila. When we get to Mechila, we're going to talk about what Mechila has to do with Chalal and what Chalal has to do with Chol. Those things are all related. So we will discuss that at some point. All right. So the next line. So Chasuchim Mikol. So the next line says, or the rest of the line says, that these days should be Chasuchim Mikol Chet Umenukim Mikol Avon. They should be Chasuchim. They should be... prevented the word chasuchim like we had in last week's parsha that Hashem tells Avimelech va'echzoch gam onochi mechatoli, I prevented you from sinning towards me. That word chasuch means prevented, so these days should be prevented from all chait, and they should be menukim from all avon, they should be clean from all avon, from all iniquity. So exactly what is so by chait we have they should be chasuchim. And by avon, they should be menukim. So we know we have the basics that chet means, the idea of chet is accidental sin. You bring a korban for a chet because you bring a korban for accidental sin, as opposed to avon means iniquity, means something that was, you know, crooked or twisted, is something which avon is a type of intentional sin. So by the accidental sin, we have they should be chasuchim mikol chet, should be prevented from all chet. And then by avon, it's menukim mikol avon. So exactly why do each of those terms match up, and what exactly is going on there? And furthermore, chasuchim mikol chet is an interesting kind of request, because chet, as we just mentioned, is shogig, and shagios miyavin, you know, shogig it's virtually unavoidable, and therefore we understand why you'd be asking for Hashem to prevent you from doing it. Shogeg is always due to one of two things, either it's a lack of awareness. It can be either a lack of awareness of the halacha or a lack of awareness of the metias, of the situation. I didn't realize that that was treif, or I didn't know that treif was usser, or whatever it is. And we're asking Hashem to prevent us from these kinds of mistakes, of chataim. They are to a certain degree beyond our control. They result from some lack of awareness of something. But it's an interesting kind of thing, because to the extent that they're beyond our control, so then why are we asking to be steered clear? It's not our fault. If to the extent that they are beyond our control, so then, you know, it doesn't really have anything to do with us. It's not our fault. It's nothing that should matter to us. And to the extent that it is within our control, so how is it fair to ask that we should be made to avoid them? You know, it seems like a violation of our free will, to the extent that we are able to avoid them, to say that we should be prevented, to ask that we should be made to avoid avoidable mistakes seems to be kind of an obviation of our own free will. So exactly what is this request? And there is a certain reality of chet. There is just like we have laws of physics, so there are, you know,
Sorry. I didn't mean to do that.
It's very appropriate, actually.
No, it's this song, Avinu Malkeinu, that you're going to want to hear.
So there is a spiritual reality to chet. Just like with physical laws, there are consequences of your actions independent of the intentions of the actor. A person, you know, falls out the window, it doesn't matter if it was accidental, they're still going to get hurt when they hit the ground. And kind of the chiddush of the Torah, of the idea of onis, of something which is beyond your will, the real chiddush of that is that not that if, the fact that you're not punished for it, you know, that the person's not held accountable for it, that's obvious. Like, what sense would it make to hold someone accountable for something which is beyond their control? The real chiddush of it is that you are not, it's treated as if it didn't happen, that you're not even held to the so to speak, automatic consequences, because there are spiritual realities. When a person when a chait happens, when a chait is done, there are spiritual repercussions of that. And you know, there are spiritual laws of cause and effect, just like there are physical ones. So there is a certain element in which, you know, we would want to avoid a chait, even though we might say that, you know, that it was unavoidable to a certain extent. We still don't want to be involved, because we understand that the Ramban says that's why you bring a korban for a chait, is because there's a mum benefesh. There's like a spiritual blemish that would happen to a person's soul because at the end of the day they did a chait. There's something that was inappropriate that happened. But at the end of the day, it's an interesting question. Exactly, you know, if this is a chait, you know, the reason we are held somewhat accountable is because it is somewhat within our realm of responsibility and was our ability to avoid it. So how is it justified to ask Hashem to prevent us from those kinds of mistakes? And the other way, umenukim mikol avon, that we should be clean from all iniquity. So seemingly, menukim is speaking to exactly this point, the effects of an avon, that the spiritual backlash, so to speak, that we should be clean from that. So we understand it's by avon. Avon means intentional sin, and there clearly, you know, the bechir is in our hands. That's an intentional sin, is something you did on purpose. It's something you did that you chose to do. So when we decide to sin, so it's our responsibility, and it would be inappropriate to ask Hashem to not let us intentionally sin. To say chasuchim mikol avon would be inappropriate, because that would kind of destroy the whole point of bechira, that to say Hashem stop me from not deciding to do the wrong thing. So that we understand would be inappropriate. So by avon we ask for that we should be clean from the avon. We don't ask that by chait, and by avon we don't ask to be prevented. So to get back to that one moment, I just want to point out before I go on, David HaMelech does ask to be prevented from doing intentional sin. David HaMelech says, "Gam mizeidim chasuch avdecha," says that you should also prevent your servant, me, David, from zeidim, from intentional sin. So exactly what does that mean? So, and I think this is an important element to how fitting everything together here in a moment. The Al-Sheikh says that David HaMelech was not asking Hashem that he should be prevented from doing intention, from you know, making bad decisions. The Al-Sheikh says that David HaMelech was asking that his past intentional sins should not drag him to future sins, as in the idea that we have of Aveira Goreris Aveira, that the one bad decision leads to another one. And David HaMelech was saying, my zedim, my intentional sins, that they shouldn't rule over me. They shouldn't bring me, now that I want to do tshuva, now that I'm coming to break free of the cycle. So David HaMelech was davening that let me break free of the effects of the trajectory of my past zedim, of my past intentional sins, in order that I should be able to change direction. So let's just try to, with all of that, put everything together. So why do we only make this request about intentional sins? When we're coming to avonos, so we say that we should be held clear of, you know, the effects, the path that it led us on, where avera goreris avera, that when you talk about avon, we say that we should be held clean from that. Shouldn't we want to also be clean from the ill effects of our unintentional sins as well? Like, why are we only by the avonos asking to be menukim? By chait, seemingly it also would make sense to ask for that.
During Kriya Shema Lamita, we ask for general, to be atoned for our general sins.
Well, this is more than atonement. This is, more has to do with the I guess we call it influence of our averus, more than just not being punished for them, which, you know, is a separate bracha in Shmoneh Esrei. We have a bracha of Slach Lanu for that, but that this is more seems to be speaking to I just used a good word a minute ago, and I forget what I said. but sort of the impression upon ourselves of the Avira.
Hashem gives us sacrifices to forgiveness of chet. He doesn't give us anything except his own decision to forgive us from Abba.
Right.
So that was trying to answer your question from before, why?
Why?
Why are we asking for clean only under Avon and not for Chet? Because we have another way of getting clean of Chet. We don't for Avon.
I mean, today we don't.
Yeah.
And in fact, by the time Shemon Esrei came around, Shemon Esrei was in place of the Korbanos. So,
it seems to me that Chet is some sort of like different what we're asking for. To me, it sounds like we're just asking that the situation doesn't even arise, that we don't go past the thing that's maybe treif. It doesn't even. We don't, like, we're just saying, like, don't even put it there. I don't want to be walking past it at that time when I'm hungry and I think, oh, that's fine, which I did one time with potato chips. it was awful. I was like,
never seen a tray of potato chips before.
It was unbelievable. No, honestly, like, I still remember it. I had to call Rabbi Breidowitz. I called her. I said, I don't know what to do. I feel. He said, you feel contaminated. I said, yes. I feel like every cell of my body is contaminated. It was a bag of Utz potato chips, which is normally totally fine, not Grandma Utz. I took a bite. It was years and
not
years
the
ago.
Bacon flavored ones.
Not flavored. Okay. Some of the bacon flavored ones are totally kosher. Some of them are nothing. It's funny. I have OUD on some of them. But no, I was going to school. I was going to a class and I was really hungry. I stopped off in a Safeway and I got a little bag of potato chips and I'm eating it in the car and I said, God, this is so good. Like, this is crunchy. Like, I wonder why they're crunchy. And I turned it around and it wasn't like Kettle who said, the L word was there.
Oh,
and I went, oh,
Lard
it was, and it was many years ago, and I called Rabbi Breidowitz. I actually did a fast the next day. I didn't know what else to do, and I stopped potato chips for 3 months, and like I was like really like very affected by it. So it's almost like, don't even put them there. Had I gone into the store, and they wouldn't have been there. It certainly wasn't intentional. I mean, Utz. I thought everything, it was pretty much, it didn't even occur to me to look for the OU because everything else had. So it's almost like, it seems like prevent the circumstances that it could even happen. Does that make sense? That's what I'm sort of seeing.
Okay. Maybe
the other thing about the cleansing, once you're cleansed from something, it's almost like after I went through, right, the 3 months of not having it, and I did a fast, and I did whatever I did, it felt like, okay, I did, I don't know. I mean, I guess I'm not saying it right, but I see it as two separate kind of things.
Well, eating with the chet is completely, it's like, that's a whole different level because your physical body really does have to recover through it. But if it's something spiritual, like a malach on Shabbos or something.
But I feel like that's spiritual as well, even though it's physical.
It is.
Yeah.
But that's even more so. That's actually a part of you. But like a chet, that's not necessarily a part of you, but it's something that you did. That could manifest differently.
Well, so I actually want to talk a little bit about this point of something being, a part of you. And that is that only Zedim, only Avonos, only intentional Averos really affect who you are. It's true that everything that you see and everything that you are involved in affects you, and someone who sees a Sota B'Kol Kula should be Yazir Atzmo and Yayin, should become a Nazir. And, there is, it's true that there is an impact, an impression upon a person from everything that they experience, but those things are matters of affecting your sensitivities. They do not, when they're done accidentally, become a part of you. And the reason for that is because you didn't choose to do that act. You chose to do something else, which is wrong, which a person is held accountable for. Person chose to not be careful. It is, if a person would not do an Avera if they were being careful enough, a chet if a person was being careful. I meant to say they wouldn't do anything wrong if they were being careful enough. Rav Hirsch says that, not going how exactly he explains it, but Rav Hirsch says that every chet includes an element of mazed in it, because at the end of the day, if we appreciated enough how serious the mitzvos were, you would never do a chet either. If you appreciate, I have this this mashal that I like to give that I heard from Rav Moshe Einstatter in Cleveland, that says that there was once a man walking around the road, and his throat was a little bit dry, so he walks into a factory on the side of the road. He sees a clear liquid on the shelf, and he says, that looks good, and he drinks it down, quenches his throat, and also burns out his insides, and he dies because it was hydrochloric acid. So he says, why did that story never happen? The reason that that story never happened is because a person does not take risks that they can't afford to take. If a person knows that their life is on, that this could kill me, and I'm a little bit, so if a person was dying of thirst, so then yeah, like either I'm gonna die of thirst or I'll die from whatever this might be. But if a person, you know, their throat is dry, this is a risk you cannot afford to take. This is my life on the line versus a scratchy throat. So said Rav Einstetter, that's the same idea. If we would appreciate that, you know, kihem chayinu varachemenu is not just that, you know, they're nice and enriching and make you feel fuzzy, but that they're your life, so then a person would be take them very seriously. And anytime a person does a chait, there is a certain amount of negligence, and that negligence is not just, you know, like when your kid doesn't clean his room, that was, you know, irresponsible, but that there's a certain lack of appreciation of the weightiness and the seriousness of mitzvos. So, yes, there is a mistake when a person does a chait, when a person does an unintentional sin. There is something needed. Being the lack of carefulness, that itself was, you know, so to speak, about the decision, whether conscious or subconscious, to not be careful. That was a bad, but the person didn't choose to eat treif. The person didn't decide to eat treif. They chose to not be careful. And not being careful might have led them to an aveira, to something wrong, as opposed to by a zadon, by an intentional sin in which you chose to do that aveira. Your decision was to do that act. That's something that becomes part of your nature. That's the kind of thing about which Chazal say, Kevan sha'avar v'shanabo nasalo keheter, that when I do this thing, I do an avera a few times, it already becomes something which, as far as I'm concerned, I consider it to be mutter, that it's something which, that becomes a part of me, is that this is an act that I chose to do. It's something that I'm accustomizing myself to. It's something that I'm involving myself in consciously and directly. Is something, the conscious decision to do that act makes me more inclined towards that act. And therefore, this is why it makes sense to ask for help with this Yetzer Hara of Shogeg, and it isn't a violation of my Bechira, because you aren't choosing to do the Avera itself. I'm not asking Hashem to prevent me from being careless. That would be, if I would say, Hashem, make sure I never, you know, I'm never careless, so that would be the same thing. That would also be seemingly compromising on my Bechira. But I'm asking Hashem that the mistakes that I make should not end up to lead to an avera. For example, if I leave my front door unlocked, so that might have been my choice to be negligent and leave the door unlocked, but I could still daven that just because I left the door unlocked, how it lets it hope that no one breaks in. The fact that I did something negligent doesn't automatically mean that an avera is going to happen. And I could say that, Hashem, even though I did do something, or I might do things which are negligent, but please don't let them lead to something terrible, because I appreciate that even after I did do something negligent, that there is even if it's not, you know, not a conscious decision to do something wrong, but there will be spiritual consequences to that. And I want Hashem to protect me that my negligent acts not lead to destructive things, not lead to spiritual destruction, which would come from an actual hate coming.
Are you talking about avon, or are you talking about...
No, we're talking about chait. That by chait...
Still talking...
Yeah, that chait, a person does something accidentally. Okay, they chose to be negligent, again, subconsciously or consciously, but they chose to be negligent. But the fact that a person's negligent doesn't mean that they're going to do an avera. It means that they're putting themselves at risk of doing an avera. And a person could say that I hope that even though I may do things which are negligent, and it's not okay for me to do that, but I could daven that Hashem don't let everything work out for the best. I shouldn't go in l'chadchila and say I'm going to be negligent and just hope everything works out for the best. But a person could say, I'm hoping that Hashem will protect me from the consequences of what I'm doing. I'm not asking Hashem to change my bechira. I'm asking Hashem that those things that I'm negligent, that I hope that they won't lead to anything which is destructive.
So that's chasuchim?
And that's what chasuchim would be. Prevent me from chait means even though I did that which would lead to chait, please don't let the chait happen. As opposed to by zadon, by intentional sin, by avon, where the direct and immediate choice was the avera. So there's no room to daven that I shouldn't do the avera when what I chose to do was the avera. I can't say even though I did an avera, don't let it happen. That would be contravening my bechira. To say that when I decide to do something wrong, don't let what I decide to do wrong happen. You decide to do something wrong. It's only when it's, I didn't decide to do something wrong. I didn't decide to do this avera. I was not careful, and that's true. That's not okay. But please don't let that lead to an actual avera, an avera happening, because just because I was negligent doesn't necessarily mean that an avera is going to happen. So therefore, by avoidable mistakes, we ask that it should not lead to a bad result, because even though we may have made the mistake, we don't want it to lead to a sin. However, we're not worried about that decision becoming a part of us. We're not worried about that becoming something which leads us down the wrong path, because our decision was not to sin. Our decision was just to not exercise the appropriate caution. But by intentional mistakes, by avon, we're not asking to avoid them, because we weren't trying to avoid it. We chose specifically to do it, and that's our, and those are our responsibility. But we only ask in as much as we have made these decisions and we've done these things and they have become part of us. We ask Hashem to give us the strength, like the Al-Sheikh says, that David HaMelech was davening for, to give us the capacity to overcome that trajectory, to overcome that momentum in the wrong direction, and to not do it more in the future. All right, so we will pause here for tonight. Sorry, I went a little over time. And pick up next week.